we're learning Parashat Vayigash. We're going to go retract to Miketz a little bit. Last week we didn't get to finish our parasha, so Yosef has the storage houses working in a tremendous efficiency. People are coming from all the lands, and they have to sign in when they come into the country, who they are, who their father is, what country they're from, how large their family is, how many people they're going to purchase for, and then when they come to buy the goods, so again, they're interviewed and they have to fill out the same form, and Yosef catches his brothers. They've come into Egypt. This, he gets the report from the border control, but they have not come to buy food. He brings them into his palace. They are disarmed, as we learned. Yosef would not allow anyone to enter Egypt with weapons. And so now they're standing in his palace surrounded by soldiers. And Yosef is standing in front of them, covered up. They can't recognize him. He's grown this whole long beard. He's wearing all the Egyptian garb. And he has this fierce look to him. And he whispers to the interpreter, yell at them and tell them, you guys are a bunch of spies. And the interpreter yells at the brothers and says, my master says you're all spies. So they say, no, tell him we're not spies. So Yosef tells the interpreter, tell them, what were you doing all around my country? How come we saw you signed in a few days ago and you didn't come to buy food? You must be spies. So the brothers tell the interpreter, tell him, we're looking for a long-lost brother. And so Yosef says, tell them, how come we found you in the brothels? That's where spies go. You wanted to find out information to pay people who aren't loyal to the country. What were you doing running around there? And they say, no, 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 you don't know that brother. We were looking over there. That's where we thought we'd find him. And Yosef throws them into the dungeon for 3 days. And he hears them talking. This is all happening because we threw Yosef into the pit. And Reuven tells them, I told you you shouldn't do this. And now Yosef hears that Reuven was on his side. Okay, it's a starting point. And then he sees Shimon and Levi, the two who had pushed him in. And so he says, these two, I have to really help them do tshuva. And so he says, that one, Shimon, is staying here with me. And the rest of you can go home and come back with your little brother and let's see that you're a real family. And then we'll talk, but don't dare show up here without him. So the brothers start heading home. And then one of them wants to feed his animals. And he finds his money in his bag. He tells the brothers, this is my money I brought from Canaan. They're all worried. They come back to their father. They tell him the story. And he says, this is very peculiar. How come Shimon isn't back? I'm missing Yosef. Now I'm missing Shimon. Now you want to take my Benjamin? No. I keep losing in this deal. No. And Reuven says, you could kill my two sons if I don't bring them back. And Yaakov says, that's stupid. Why would I want to kill your sons? They're mine. They're my grandchildren. No way. If that's the way you talk, for sure I'm not sending Binyamin with you. Yehuda tells the brothers, wait it out. One of the great traits of a leader is the ability to see beyond the moment. Not to get all panicked because something's happening now, but to wait and think. And so Yehuda tells the brothers, wait. Wait, the old man will get hungry. And so Yaakov calls them and says, okay, I want you to go back to Egypt and buy us food. And Yehuda steps up and says, the man told us not to show up without our little brother. If Binyamin is coming with us, we will go and buy food for you. Notice the stress, for you, as though we can manage. And if not, we're not going, because the man warned us not to dare show up without Binyamin. So Yaakov says, what'd you do to me? Why'd you have to tell him you have a little brother? And the brothers say, we didn't know where he was headed. The guy knew everything about us. We were standing there and he started saying, you two had a bed next to one another. And you two, you also had beds next to one another. You guys used to whisper at night like this and that. And your father would get very upset at you. And he's telling us everything. He knows everything about us. The man is some sorcerer. We didn't dare say something that wasn't right next to him. He knew everything. He knew how to say what beds we slept in as little children. He never met us before. So they said, we didn't dare say different. We didn't know what he would demand of us. So Yaakov says, okay, then at least bring him some of the fruit of the land. Yaakov calls it Zimrat Ha'aretz, the song of the land. The song of the land, the beautiful fruits of the land of Israel. Yes, sir. He will. In our parsha, he will lie. He didn't yet. We will get there. It's a good point. So Yaakov sends them down and he prays that they all come back safely. Now, they had all seen that their money was there in their bags, and Yehuda is starting to suspect something. But when they get back, so Yosef's top man, his son Menashe, gathers them. He says, you're coming to the king's palace. And they see that instead of being taken to buy food, they're being brought to Yosef's home. So they get all nervous. They say they're going to pounce on us and steal our donkeys. So they call Menashe. They say, we have to explain something to you. There was some kind of mistake when we left. We found our money in our bags. And we don't know how it happened because we paid you. But we brought new money to pay for the goods. And Menashe says, no worries, gentlemen, I got my money. Your God must have given you a gift. Because on our records you paid. So your God gave you a gift. And this is the game that Yosef is now going to play with them. Are they up? Are they down? Are they up? Are they down? Their God gave them a gift. Everything's beautiful. We're very happy you came. Yosef asked to invite you. He said he wants to honor you with a meal. And so they bring out Shimon and they sit them down and they tell them, Yosef's coming to dine with you. So the prince of Egypt is going to have a meal with these fine people who have come in from Canaan. So they're all preparing and they have these gifts prepared for him. And they're all anxious. Notice how Yosef is playing with them. He's not there when they show up. They have to wait for him. He will come in the afternoon. They have to anticipate the great meal with Yosef. And so Yosef sends his son Menashe. He says, tell them you know how Hebrews eat meat. Show them the knife. Make sure the knife is very perfect. And then tell them you're going to slaughter the animal for them. And you show them how you know how Jews slaughter animals. And so Menashe says, okay, gentlemen, we're going to prepare meat. You guys have to approve the meat. Come tell me if the knife is good to your liking. He gives them the knife. They check the knife. It's good for slaughtering. And they show them how they know how to process meat the Jewish way. And they bring out wine and meat, and Yosef shows up. Yosef walks over to Benjamin, who's already married with 10 children. And he says, is this your young brother that you told me about? And they say, yeah. And he says, Hashem should give you chen, my son. Now, it's not clear among the commentaries if at this point Binyamin knows what's going on or not. What is clear is that Binyamin knew that Yosef was not dead. Binyamin named his children after Yosef. He named his children after the fact that he had a great difficulty, and I never understood this difficulty until I got married. Binyamin named his children after the sorrow of having to celebrate life without his brother at his side. And so all 10 names of his children reflect this idea that in the great moments of his life, of getting married and having children, his brother was not at his side. Look, Rashi. Rashi quotes it on the pasuk. When he meets, I'll show you.
It talks that Yaakov knew that Yosef was alive. And says, why are you doing this bad to me? Says, you're going to sell Binyamin. Rashi says, you're going to sell Binyamin like you sold Yosef.
Let's see the Rashi inside.
That's Rashi.
Why don't you show me which Rashi you mean? Oh, good. He's looking for it. Now, this is something that many of us will experience. I remember when I got engaged, and my brother's called to say Mazel Tov. And as nice as it is to be with your wife's family, it's just not the same. You're alone. When I got engaged and got married, and when I had a Pidyon HaBen for our son, and I had no relatives, my parents, my siblings weren't here, That's when I started understanding this Rashi. Until that point, you know, I'm doing my thing. I have to grow, I have to learn, I have to develop, I have to do what I have to do. And it's fine. But suddenly when you have those special moments in your life, you want your family there.
So why does this come to show that he knew he was alive?
Because the way he worded it was, my brother is stuck, lost somewhere, and he's not here with me. It's not my brother's dead.
Which verse?
36.
What do you want? What does Rashi say? He suspected maybe they killed Yosef, maybe they sold him. He wasn't sure.
It wasn't a strong suspicion.
He wasn't sure. Says he suspected. He wasn't sure. That's what Rashi also says in Chayah Ha'achalatu. Rashi says from the very beginning, Yaakov was telling them, I'm not sure whether you guys killed him or you guys did something else. I don't know.
But it was definitely the brothers?
No. Says he suspected. Hashadan, he suspected. So, Yosef sits them down and he sets them up according to families. Now, how did he know who came from which mother? And then he says to Binyamin, he says, ooh, your mother died when you were a baby. My mother's dead already too, so we can sit together. And so he sits down with Binyamin for the meal. And then this is all going through an interpreter. Nothing's being said directly. And throughout the meal, as they're eating, Yosef serves them wine. It's disrespectful not to drink wine. They drink wine. For 20 years, they haven't drank wine, nor has Yosef. They, as much as they thought what they did was right, they would not drink wine afterwards, which is a telling point, because right after they decided to kill him, it says, Vayeshevu le'chol lechem, they sat down to eat bread. Yosef's in the pit wailing, guys, don't do this to me! And they run away from the pit and they sit down to eat. The halacha says a court that executes someone can't eat the rest of the day. The person deserved to die, he was warned and everything, and still they killed someone, they're not allowed to eat the rest of the day. And the pasuk goes out of its way to tell us that after they put him in the pit, they went and sat down to eat. Yet here the pasuk tells us they drank wine for the first time in 20 years, now that they were reunited. For those 20 years they wouldn't drink wine, they felt like it wasn't right for them. So they're all drinking, and Yosef for the first time in 20 years is drinking wine. And throughout the meal, Yosef hits his goblet, and then he starts telling them things about themselves. And every time he hits the goblet, and he tells the interpreter, tell them this, tell them that. And he could tell them a lot about their history. And they are very taken by how this guy knows this. Now remember, Binyamin is sitting him with him at the meal. And Yosef has them sleep over in his palace that night. And it's only the next morning he tells them, you guys wait till there's enough light outside. It's not safe to travel when it's dark. He makes sure they all have all the food and the money put in their bags. And they're sent off. And of course he tells his son Menashe, you stick the goblet in Binyamin's bag. And they all are loaded on their donkeys, and Yosef wishes them well. Thank you very much. They leave, and they're just not so far away from the city when Yosef sends Menashe with all the troops after them. Suddenly the Egyptian army is upon them. They're traveling, and they see soldiers. And Menashe comes yelling at them, what's wrong with you? How could you do such a thing to us? Why would you do such an evil thing? And he's yelling at them as though they know what he's talking about. They turn back and they say, what do you want? And Menashe says, you know, why, after we've been so good to you, why would you treat us this way? Why would you take my master's goblet? And Menashe is the one who's responsible for causing the great tension that's about to ensue. And because of the way Menashe plays it out, the brothers will tear their clothing. Menashe will be punished for this. Menashe's tribe is the tribe who is torn, half on the eastern side of the Jordan, half inside Israel. his tribe is divided because he caused the brothers now to tear their shirts.
Well, he was meant to just go and tell them, hey guys, you still come back.
So Menashe plays the game. He starts checking their bags, and of course, he begins with the eldest, and he ends with Binyamin. Lo and behold, there's the goblet. He pulls out the goblet. Now, the brothers had said, whoever you find it by, Noahide law, you kill him. The rest of you will be your slaves. We guarantee no one here steals the thing. And so he says, we don't have to do that. He'll come back. He'll be a slave. We caught him with the theft. The rest of you can leave. Now, he's putting them back in the same scene as they sold Yosef. There's one guilty one, and the rest of you are innocent. He's the Rasha, you're the Tzadikim. He's... Now what are they going to do? He has recreated the scene of Yosef. The same scene, they were convinced Yosef was guilty. They were convinced Yosef was a threat to the family. They were convinced Yosef, if he stays in the fold, would destroy everyone. Now they had all said, we will all be slaves, and he will be dead. And he's telling them, no, you don't have to leave him in the pit to die. I will take him and he will be a slave in Egypt. We have deja vu. He has recreated for them the scene of the sale of Yosef. He has given them an opportunity we usually don't have in life. The opportunity to do tshuva. In life, we usually, if we mess up, we don't always have another opportunity to get it right. And here Yosef has done them the service after 20 years of creating a scenario where they don't know it, but they are being put to the test, time number two. And that's where our parasha begins. The brothers come back to Yosef. The brothers are standing before Yosef and they say, what could we say? You know, you found something and we have nothing to say at this point. And Yosef says, it's okay. You guys can all go home in peace. And with that, the parasha ends. Yosef says, it's fine. Only Benjamin did something wrong. You are all tzaddikim. You have nothing to worry about. You guys can all go home in peace. Just leave him here. He is now my slave. And so that's where our parasha ended last week. Yes, sir.
Is that the same thing? Was it also a tikkun when Yosef gave more to Binyamin than the rest of the tribe?
Maybe. I don't know.
I read that he did it in order to arouse jealousy. They would be jealous of Binyamin and see how they acted. It also ties into the tshuva. Because what they did came from jealousy, so you had to make it...
Okay. The Gemara doesn't say that. Yes.
I asked myself why is Benjamin so quiet. Why is he no?
That's a great question. So
normally,
when the brothers saw Benjamin with the goblet, so the Medrash says, each one came and gave him a whack between his shoulders, and they said to him, "You thief! The son of a thief! Your mother stole, and now you stole. Your mother stole the trophim, and that's why she died. And now you steal this goblet, and what are you doing to us?" And Binyamin's silent. So I saw a beautiful shot. I don't know who says it. That the second they said, thief, the son of a thief, Binyamin was stuck. What was he supposed to say? I'm not. No, I'm not. In other words, my mom is, but I'm not. Meaning, right, by saying it that way, they put him in a place where he couldn't say anything out of respect for his mother. So Binyamin silent, and Chazal say, Bein Kitefav Shechin. Hashem chose the resting place for the Shekhinah between the shoulders of Benjamin. Between the shoulders that accepted a whack from each brother. They didn't stand by him at that moment. They didn't say, Binyamin, we know it's all a farce. They came and said, why'd you do it? So Binyamin was sitting next to Yosef. Again, Yosef set it up. He looks guilty. And they come before Yosef, and here our parsha begins. Vayigash Eilav Yehuda. Yehuda steps forward. And we have many interpretations in the Medrash as to what's going on here. Chazal tell us these are two forces. Yosef is the force of the ox. Yehuda is the force of the lion. And now they're going to face off. There are two strengths in Am Yisrael. And Yosef historically sets the stage for Yehuda to take the leadership.
Esav also resembled as an ox.
Yes. Yosef takes on Esav, right? It has to be Yosef that takes on Esav, right? So, He says, let me talk to you. You know my grandma? Sarah? Paro held her for one night. And, you know, he and his whole house was punished. I don't want you to get punished like that. You know, his mother? She died because my father said a curse. And you don't want us to curse you. And two of us here, two of us brothers, we went into a city and no one was left alive because that city took a girl of ours. You're taking a boy, and I don't think you're telling the truth because there was money in each of our sacks. The money was replaced again, and this story is starting to look a little bit different than the way it's being played out. I don't think the story is the way we're seeing it. And this child is more pious than that girl who was taken in Shechem. He is the one who's chosen that Hashem will rest in his portion. Paro makes decrees, he doesn't live up to his word. Look at you, you're the same. Paro takes little boys and sleeps with them. Look at you, you're, I guess, the same. Paro is king and you're number two. Well, let me tell you something. My father is king in Israel and I'm number two. And if I'm taking out my sword, I'm going to start with you and end with Paro. And this time Yehuda's there with his weapons because they had caught them outside the city. Yosef says, you know, they were caught outside the city. We said when they'd enter the city, they had to leave their weapons on the side. But this time they brought him into the city. They're all dressed. They're with their garb. So he says, I'm responsible for him. I took responsibility by my dad. And Yosef says, that's funny. Why didn't you take responsibility for that brother that you sold? I see that you sold the brother. And boy, did you hurt your father for 20 years. And Yehuda says, how can I go up to my dad without the kid? How am I supposed to do that? Yosef says, let's have it out. Come, I want to hear what are your arguments. Yehuda tells Naphtali, I want you to give me a count. How many marketplaces are in Egypt? How many main streets? He comes back to Yehuda and he says there are 12. Yehuda says, I will destroy 3 and each of you can destroy 1. And Yosef says, Yehuda, wait a minute. This isn't Shechem. This is Mitzrayim. You want to destroy Mitzrayim? The world's going to die because everyone needs Mitzrayim. Right now, there's a famine. And no one else, none of you were successful in holding on to food. So you can't just destroy Mitzrayim. So Yehuda says, hey, wait, he has a point. Says, but you know, you're not fair. You keep putting us on the spot. You told us we're spies. You told us we spent these days trying to figure out where we can attack the land. You told us we stole a goblet. I swear by my grandfather who was pious. You swear by Pharaoh who's wicked. Don't play it like you're so honest and everything's legitimate here. I am right now containing myself, but I might just draw my sword and then Egypt will be filled with corpses. And Yosef says, if you draw that sword, I'm going to wrap it around your neck. And Yehuda says, you know, I am ready to swallow you. And Yosef says, you open that mouth, I'm going to put a stone in it. Yehuda says, well, what do you want me to tell my father? And Yosef says, tell him that when a bucket falls into the pit, so the rope goes after it. His mother died because she stole, so now he stole. Boom. Now Yosef is throwing a surprise at them. He says, tell him, you know, your father knows why his wife died. He knows that this family is prone to theft. Tell him that's what happens. Yehuda says, you know, you're not being fair. You're making believe this is all legitimate. This is not legitimate. Yosef says, I don't know. The only person who I see not being fair here is you. You sold a brother. Now you're coming to me with arguments, but you sold a brother. That seems to me to be a person who judges unfairly. Yehuda says, you know, my fire is starting to burn with me in me because I'm sensing that you're taking him because you want to sleep with him, not for any legitimate reasons. Yosef says, that's very interesting. You think you can judge people about why they take other people. I know that you went with this very interesting woman who was clad in, and you can judge me. Yehuda says, if I'm going to get upset, no one's going to stand before me. Yosef says, I will. Yehuda says, I'm going to go out there and paint Egypt with blood. Yosef says, you guys are good painters. You painted your brother's garment with blood. You go back home and tell your father that he's dead. You're painters. They're very interesting. So Yosef is repeatedly forcing them to face the fact that they sold him. And they have to be able to say, we were wrong. We shouldn't have done it. Now under pressure, Yehuda had said, how could I come back and tell my father what happened here? How can I do that? My father already buried his older brother. Yosef standing there, hearing him say, you know, my father already lost a child. So now Yosef understands all those years Yosef didn't send word back to his father because he didn't know. The last thing his father taught him was what happens when a Jew is walking alone and gets murdered. And then he comes up to the brothers and they try to kill him. And Yosef wonders, what was Dad trying to tell me? Was my father also in on this? And now he hears how the brothers simply say, when Binyamin is present, suddenly their story changes. Last time they visited, they said, we have a missing brother. This time in front of Binyamin, they don't say, we have a missing brother. They say, our brother's dead. How could my father lose another son? Yosef says, oh, inside himself, he says, oh, so Abba thought I was dead all these years. That's why they painted my garment with blood. Now Yosef puts the pieces together. It says they did it before he was sold. That's what the pasuk says. No. No, it says it afterwards, not beforehand. I think the Medrash says it happened beforehand, but in the pasuk it appears afterwards, not beforehand. How did he know what happened with Tamar? Obviously, as king of Egypt, he had the tools to find out what was happening with Yaakov's family. So
back then, with the garments, he wasn't yet king. He wasn't yet.
But now we could do homework and find out what's going on in Yaakov's family. So Yosef has cornered them, and the brothers all huddle, and they decide, we're going to fight to the finish. We're not letting go of Binyamin. And if we have to kill everyone here, we're going to do it. We're not letting go of Binyamin. And when Yosef hears that, so Yosef sees he's brought them to the point where they do tshuva. What he's telling them is, I do not want him for all the reasons you think I want him for. He legitimately deserves to be a slave. And the brothers are fighting for Yosef. And the brothers are willing to put their lives on the line for Binyamin. They're willing to put their lives on the line for the brother who they think is wrong, who they hit over the head as they got off their horses and said, why'd you do this to us? So even though they think that there's something amiss here, but they think Binyamin is wrong, and even so, they have stood by Binyamin all this time, they have not let go. Now that they've reached this point, he hears them saying, let's go. We're ready for war. And Yosef says, let's talk. Yes?
I heard once, maybe you know what I'm talking about, that now you explain the whole dialogue between them. But I just heard simply that Judah stomped on the ground, and then Yosef got back and stomped as well. And so Judah showed his power just through a stomp, and Yosef showed the same, like, if not even more power back through the same action. Can you touch on that?
If you want to, so let me bring a medrash. I'll read it from the medrash, okay? I don't know if I have a copy of it here. Yes, sir.
There's something also about Judah. Says that apparently the hair of his hair,
right,
of his body,
right,
started also getting straight like thorns through his garments.
Right. So you guys want to cover that medrash? That's fine. Give me a minute. Let me see. I used to have it here in my notes. I don't see it. I'll go get the Medrash itself. Okay, let me go get the Medrash. So you guys wanted me to go through the Midrashim on the beginning of the parasha. So there are a few Midrashim here. One Midrash says like this. Vaigash elav Yehuda. So the word Vaigash appears when Yoav goes to war. It says Vaigash. When the tribe of Yehuda came to appease Yehoshua, it says Vaigash. And when Elio went to pray, it says Vaigash. So Chazal say, Yehuda said, I'm prepared. He said, if I have to go to war, Vaigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda said, if what I need now is war, I'm ready for war. If what I need now is to talk to you nicely, I'm ready to talk nicely. If I need to pray, I'm going to pray. Be Adoni. Be. I am better than him for you as a master. If you need someone to draw water, I can do better than him. If you need someone to serve you, I can do better than him. If any job you need done, I can do better than him. Be Adoni. The Medrash says, B can be read as Baya, which means a yell. You are causing us to yell. You're frustrating us because we don't have much of a choice. We're going to have to leave here and tell everyone what a dishonest person you are after all these games you've been playing with us. Rabbi Simon says he told him, B, you want to talk to me honestly? Talk to me my rules. Where we come from, if a person stole something, he pays. He could pay double. You only take a person as a slave if they have no money to pay. He has money to pay. How much taxes do you want for having stolen your goblet? He says, I'm ready to talk to you. I'm ready to cover. What do you want? But why take him as a slave? The Medrash continues, Yedaberna avdecha, he says, if I speak, believe me, I could finish you off. It says, Amar Rabbi Chanin, b'sha'a shaya Yehuda ma'ale chima, when Yehuda would get upset, hayu sarot libo boke'ot kelav v'yotzot, the hairs on his chest would stand and pierce through his clothing. V'ayanotena shashiyot shel barzel etoch piv u'motziyan ke'avak, and he would take pieces of metal into his mouth, grind them up, and blow them out as dust.
What is this?
Let's first hear what it says, and then think about what it means. A different medrash says, says later on in the medrash, he said, I'm going to kill you first and finish off with Paro. Ki chamocha kefaro. I'm ready to start with you and end with Paro. So Yosef said to his son Menashe, show him. And Menashe gave a kick, and the whole castle trembled. So Yehuda said, that's our family. That's not something I'm used to seeing anywhere else. So that's when Yehuda started saying, wait a second, this isn't what we think is going on here. And that's when Yehuda walks over and says, let me talk to you. And he starts talking gently. So that's the medrash you guys were referring to. There's a different medrash that says, when Yosef said to him, go home, everything will be okay. Yehuda says, you're holding on to Binyamin and you're saying everything's going to be okay. Yehuda gave out a roar. And Yehuda's roar, the Medrash says, could be heard 400 parsa. That's all the way to the land of Israel. And his deaf nephew, Hushim ben Dun, was in Israel. Heard what was going on. So the Medrash says... That's the Medrash. And that Chushim ben Dan heard his uncle yelling. He says, oh no, something's wrong. So he came, ran down to Egypt. And the two of them stood there yelling, and their roar was so loud that all of Egypt started having tremors. They thought there would be volcanoes, the whole thing would be overturned. That's what Eov recorded as Shagat Aryeh V'Kol Shachal, the roar of a mature lion, the roar of a young lion. That's Yehuda and Chushim ben Dan, that they were both the two lions that were roaring there. The Medrash says Yosef's soldiers standing there, when Yehuda got angry and yelled, their teeth dropped out. Okay, so the Medrash uses fantastic terms to describe what happened here. It says, when Yehuda used to get upset, Shnei Shiltonin Zaligot Dam. When Yehuda used to get upset, so I think it means he had on his back the two.
What is it? What does it say in Arabic?
Shilton. In another medrash, it says that his eye used to bleed. That as he used to eat the metal would drip down the side of his mouth, and he'd get upset, and then his eye would start bulging out blood, and it would you'd see the blood and the lead dripping down his cheek, mixing together. It says Yehuda used to wear 5 layers, and he had 1 hair on his heart, and when he would get upset it would stand up like a sword and pierce through all 5. So that's okay. These are it says when Yosef saw Yehuda getting so upset, he had this huge boulder in front of his throne. He stood up and gave it a kick, and the boulder crumbled into stones. So Yehuda got scared. He said, he's stronger than I am. So Yehuda was ready to draw out his sword, and he put his hand on his sword and he couldn't get it out. So Yehuda said, why can't I pull my sword? So he said, must be God doesn't want him dead. Must be this person is a really God, he's really a God-fearing person. And that's why Yehuda softened his tones and says, my master said, he speaks to Yosef with respect. So the Medrash again gives us the fantastic stories of Yehuda. I tell it to my kids the way it is, right? The way it says in the Medrash. And they'll grow up. They'll learn that there's more meaning to the Medrash. But for kids, this is the most exciting Medrash, right?
That's what we're all doing here.
This is the version in the Medrash Rabbah. The Tanchuma has a similar thing. So that's the Medrash on Yehuda. So Yosef says, I want to have a word with you. And he asks everyone to leave the room. Now Yehuda has threatened he will kill Yosef. And what Yosef is about to do is tshuva for Yosef. Instead of embarrassing him in front of everyone, and Binyamin knew all along Yosef was sold, and so Binyamin's stone was Yoshfei. The brothers didn't realize he knew, but he did know. Yoshfei is Binyamin's stone, which stands for Yeshpeh. He had the mouth, he had the capacity to tell what had happened, and he kept quiet all those years. So
what's Yoshpeh?
That's the name of the stone, Yoshpeh. On the Choshen. That was his stone. So Yehuda says, let's talk. I want everyone to leave. Everyone leaves the room. Yosef says, I want to bring you your brother. They were in Yosef's house. What do you mean? It says they were brought back to Yosef's palace. Everything took place in his palace, and then he asked everyone to leave the room. They closed the doors, and then Yosef says, you know what, before we continue our conversation, I want to call your brother the one that you sold. So they're standing there in shock. Wait a second, we just said he was dead. Yosef says, just a minute. Yosef ben Yaakov, come. Yosef ben Yaakov. And he turns to the right side of the room. And he calls out, Yosef ben Yaakov, I want you to come. And all the brothers are standing, staring to the right side of the room. And they don't see him coming. And they're looking, and they're looking, and he keeps calling. And then, after they've been looking to the right side of the room, he turns to the left side of the room, and he starts calling again. Yosef ben Yaakov, come on, I'm calling you. So all the brothers turn to the left side of the room, and he starts walking in that direction. They're with him, looking, where is he? And then, after a few moments of that, he goes to the front of the room. And he starts heading forward and he says, Yosef ben Yaakov, I've been calling you. Could you please come? I want you to meet your brothers. And all the brothers are scared and they go with him to the front of the room. And obviously nothing doing. And finally, he takes them back to the throne. And he heads back in that direction. And he's calling, Yosef ben Yaakov, come, come. Your brothers are here. And they're walking behind him. They're waiting. They still believe he's going to show. And then he turns around. He turns around and looks at them, and he calls them around him, and they're all standing next to him, and he says, I am Yosef ben Yaakov. And he said to them, why are you looking in every other direction? I am he. And the Medrash says, they all fainted on the spot. Boom. Chazal have a very famous line on this pasuk. Chazal say, "Vaylanu miyom adin, vaylanu miyom atochicha." Woe to us from the day Hashem will judge us. Woe to us from the day Hashem will prove to us. Yosef's brothers were standing opposite him, and for 20 years they didn't feel like they had to do tshuva. They were saddened by what had happened. They said, "We can't drink wine because our brother is gone. We're not whole." But they didn't say, "Let's go off to Egypt and do tshuva." We were right, we were right, we were right. And suddenly they're standing facing Yosef. Were they right? They're standing there facing Yosef and they're saying, we're not going to do that again. But wait, Binyamin was wrong. Why don't you do the same thing? No. Because there's something about the connection to a brother that goes beyond the question of right and wrong. There's something that should be there. And so now that Yosef puts them face to face with the question, I'm Yosef. And in other words, do you still think you were right? And we will all have that moment when Hashem forces us to face the contradictions we have within ourselves. Chazal say there are two stages. There's the day of judgment, but first there's the day of Tochecha, where Hashem says, let me show you the contradictions within yourself, which is what Yosef was doing to Yehuda. You're saying, I made it up? You made it up. You told your father Yosef's dead. You're saying, I'm interested in inappropriate relationships. You were interested in inappropriate relationships. You're saying, you're ready to kill out the city. This isn't Shechem. You're trying to show consistency. You don't have consistency. You don't have consistency. And Chazal say we will all have to face that day where we are forced to face our inconsistencies, where we can talk to someone and be so upset at them for doing something, yet we don't realize we've been doing the same thing. We're very easy to go hard on people, and yet we're guilty of the things we blame other people. So we don't have that Yetzer Hara. Very often we look at someone, they have a Yetzer Hara we don't have. We look at them and say, how could you do that? That's so stupid. That's so wrong. Don't you understand that? Wait a second. What about all the things we do wrong? That's so stupid. That's so wrong. Don't we understand that? So we have contradictions, and very often in the very issue that we're upset at someone else for, we are really guilty ourselves. And that's a tremendous tool, at least in interpersonal relationships. If we can take and formulate our arguments against someone else and then just replace our name instead of their name, we will very often find that they can paint that argument against us. That in truth, we were overlooking where we were doing what we are really upset at them for. So Yosef says to them, I am your brother who you sold to here. But he begins by saying, I am your brother. He is saying, I am connected to you, even though you did sell me down to here. But you know what? when I was young, I thought I would be king so that all of you would bow to me. And now I realize that I am king so as to serve all of you. I had to undergo everything I underwent so that I would be here for you. I thought kingship was about you serving me. And now I realize that kingship is about me serving you. I was sent down here so that I would have all this food to help you out. That was Hashem's plan in putting me here. Now you have to bring Abba down to Egypt. Tell him I'm still alive. Tell him I'm doing well here in Egypt. And that I want him here close to me so I could take care of him. Don't stay in the capital. Be close, but not in the capital. I'll be able to take care of you. If I try to send to Canaan, they will suspect me that I'm preparing storage houses of wealth. That's why I'm exporting all this food. They'll think maybe I want to leave the country. It will cause tremendous difficulties. I can't export food like that and take care of you. There's another 5 years of famine, but you have to come down, and that way you will weather the storm with me. So he expected another 5 years of famine. He couldn't be confident there'd be enough food to feed the world. There'd be enough food for Egypt. But can he really send food out to them? Yosef says to them, if you have any doubt, look, I'm talking to you Hebrew. And I am telling you that the way I say it, that's the way I feel. The brothers will go to the grave not having asked Yosef for Mechila. Till today we pay the price of the brothers not coming up to Yosef and saying, Yosef, we're sorry. The brothers will do all kinds of things, but they will not say, Yosef, we're sorry, we were wrong. They will tell him, you know, your father said you shouldn't hold it against them. They will say, we're all prepared to be your slaves. They will say a lot of different lines, but they will not say, we're sorry, please forgive us. And so Chazal say this stain remains with us till today, on the holiest day of the year, the Kohen Gadol Shech Tzegdi Izin. Many commentaries say he is going back to that Gdi Izin that the brothers shechted to cover up that hatred that was going on between them. And so every year again the Kohen Gadol has to do it. And Chazal tell us that we lost scores of the greatest people in the Jewish people. We know Asara Rugei Malchut, but it wasn't only Asara Rugei Malchut. Chazal say this happened over the fact that this stain remained with us.
So the Akiva's students also tied to this?
Part of it. So they are sent back. Yosef says, do me a favor. Al tirgezu badarech. Don't fight the way home. Very often you look back and you start arguing, you said, but you said, and you could have, and you should have. Don't fight on your way home. And he sends back the wagons loaded with food to take care of Yosef and bring him down to Egypt. The wagons are there to show Yaakov that Yosef remembers. Egla Arufa. So Yosef is showing him, I can't be there to accompany you, but I sent you my wagons to accompany you. I remember the last thing you taught me. Yaakov is sitting at home and his son's adopted daughter. He has a son, Asher. Asher married a woman who had a daughter, Serach Bas Asher. Serach is not the biological daughter of Asher. She is the adopted daughter, the stepdaughter that Asher raised. So Serach Bas Asher used to play music. The brothers summon her out and they tell her, go home, start singing a song next to our father, next to your grandpa. And the what's it called? The line that you keep repeating? The re... No. Refrain, thank you. The refrain should be, and Yosef's still alive, and Yosef's still alive. Stick that into your song, prepare him. And so she goes back, and she starts singing this song, and Yaakov starts hearing in the background, and Yosef's still alive. Yeah, so what are you singing? She says, just a song. He says, okay, switch songs. She switches songs, and then she comes back to that song, and Yosef's still alive. And he says, what are you singing? Oh, another song. Okay, switch songs. And she keeps coming back to it. And then the brothers come back, and they have these wagons, and they come in, and they tell Yaakov, we just came back from Egypt. And you know what? They don't say Yosef is the one we were dealing with all the time. They say Yosef is alive in Egypt, and he's in charge of everything there. He's the one in charge. They will never share with Yaakov what happened. And there are two opinions among the commentaries. One opinion says Yaakov will go to the grave not knowing what happened. Yosef will spend the rest of his life careful not to be alone with Yaakov, so that Yaakov won't ask him any questions. And so Yaakov comes to Egypt and he doesn't know what happened. Where have you been the last 20 years? Yaakov will never kiss Yosef. Yosef kisses Yaakov, but Yaakov doesn't kiss Yosef, because Yaakov senses that Yosef had temptations, had moments. It was Yaakov's spirit that came and saved him. But Yaakov's not confident as to what happened in those moments. And that's why on Yaakov's last days, Yosef will show him, Dad, I have a legal contract with this woman. I'm married to her. Here's my ksuba. I've been clean. And Yaakov doesn't know. And so even though Yaakov is coming to reunite with Yosef, Yaakov maintains a certain distance. Yosef is now dressed like an Egyptian. He has a great relationship with Yosef, but it's only so far. On some level, Yaakov doesn't really know, and Yosef doesn't tell him. That's one shot. The Medrash takes a different course. Yes?
Is it possible, he was sold to a specific job, is it possible that he had to actually do that job? Or he refrained from doing that job?
No, Chazal's saying that. I don't know of any source that says he did. No. Okay, we will pick up here.